Hello, everyone. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Player Development First podcast. This is episode 10 with Ian Wing. Myself and Ian met back in 2017 when we were both working for Larchmont Mamaroneck FC. Today we discuss Ian's background growing up, how he got into coaching, the timeline of his coaching in New York, his current club role, where he's a director of coaching for East Fishkill Soccer Club. We also discuss how he got into college coaching and his current role as a head coach of a men's program in a community college locally to him, and how we also discussed how children play multiple sports, how they juggle playing competitive soccer, and his coaching aspirations for the future. So it was great to get Ian on. Thanks very much for listening, everybody. Hope you enjoy it. Hey, Ian, thanks very much for coming on the podcast today, mate.
No problem, Greg. It's good to be here. I'm very excited to have a chat with you this morning.
Thanks very much. So, mate, just with all my guests, I'd like to go back to the start. So where did you grow up, Ian? And what was your background growing up in England?
So I grew up in a place called Hertfordshire, which was suburbs of North London.
Yep.
And my first sort of introduction to soccer there, my first memory of playing soccer was probably playing for my club team, my Boy Scouts team.
Yeah.
That was probably when I was about 6 or 7 years old. That was probably my first game, 11v11, full-size field. Many moons ago.
Yeah, brilliant. So, did you play for any teams? Did you go all the way through your youth career? Did you play for any other teams?
So my playing career is relatively short. You know, I mean, yeah. I played locally. I played for local teams. Played with my high school team, but really beyond playing for my local teams and then playing for my high school, yeah. I didn't have a playing career beyond that. I was someone that took part in a lot of sports, and soccer was one of those sports that I loved to play. I mainly played on teams with friends. So my local team at the time was Chesant, and I played there for a short time. And then a lot of my high school friends were far better players than me playing. You know, they were picked up by academies and playing in academies and getting a supplemental training there. I really just tagged along and took part in teams with them. And then the team that I finished playing for was a town called Wormley, which was a neighboring town of mine growing up.
Yep.
So yeah, my playing career was really, really very short.
And how did you get into coaching?
So after high school, I went to college at Sheffield Hallam University. Okay. I took a sport and exercise science degree. And within that, there were some optional modules that we could take. So I took some coaching modules and enjoyed it. Midway sort of through my first year at school there, I was looking for a summer job. There were a lot of posters up around the college that you could go to the States and coach soccer.
Yep.
So myself and a bunch of the guys put our name in a hat and applied, and I think I was the only one that followed through with it. Everyone kind of bailed out through the process. But I went and interviewed, and I came over with what at that time was probably around, I think that would have been around 98. I came over with Major League Soccer camps.
Okay.
And spent about, it was about 8 weeks that I spent in the northeast of the US, going from town to town, week to week, staying with host families and coaching camps during the day. And that was my first real introduction to coaching. And then I came back from that, obviously finished school, did a bit of coaching while I was in the UK. And then I enjoyed my experience so much in the US that I wanted to come back to the US, which is what led me to working for UK Elite and longer term visas and finally setting roots in New York.
In New York, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure just that was a great experience for you, just as you're getting get your feet wet in coaching, you get to come to the States for 8 weeks. I'm sure you're just getting a lot of minutes on the ground and dealing with a lot of different children and in a camp environment even. I'm sure that was a great experience. Did you do any sort of licensing before that, or were you good to go back then, or how did you?
I think the first time I came over, the requirement was that I had an FA license.
Right.
So I think that would have been the level one license level back one, then. Yep. So I had to take the FA level one license, which I did with former pro was running the course. It was a good course. But really, I learned more from being on camp with the other coaches every day. And I think that was the main attraction going forward, was being in the US and being able to coach every single day, as opposed to once or twice a week in England for an hour or two at a time.
In an evening, yeah. And so you've seen was it whenever you graduated from Sheffield that you, did you apply for UK Elite then?
Yeah, so I think I did a summer with UK Elite after my second year at college.
Right.
And then once I finished college, I came back out and did another summer. And then after that, I was basically asked to stay on beyond the summer camp window and work with teams. And that's when I was based in New Jersey, and I was working in mainly in northern New Jersey clubs in towns like Glenrock, Ridgewood. I think we did some programming in West Orange. So that was my first experience there working within travel clubs in the US. After that, I went home for a winter and came back out to the US for the following spring and did the 9-month visa. And that's when my stays were more extended and kind of applied for visas whilst I was here and stayed on after that.
Yeah. And so what were you still in New Jersey at that point, or did you, because I know you've done a lot of coaching in New York.
Yeah. So at that point I was still in New Jersey. At that time, UK Elite had a really good relationship with the NSCAA.
Yep.
So was fortunate at that point that they put us through a lot of licensing with them. I would say it was probably around 2003, 2004 that I moved to New York, because UK Elite wanted to have more programming in New York.
Yeah, okay.
So I moved into New York in two capacities, as a coach and as a kind of basically a sales rep to go and solicit business from travel clubs in the New York area. So I was based out of close to White Plains and working in clubs in and around White Plains. So
Westchester area.
Westchester area then.
Yeah.
So I was working with clubs there, working with clubs a little bit further north. And really sort of initiated.
So you're trying to sell them trainers?
Yeah, really. Everything. So it was going into clubs and talking to clubs about whether they wanted to work, have their teams work with trainers, and whether their clubs wanted additional clinics or whether their clubs were interested in hosting a summer camp.
Yeah.
And then based on that, UK Elite would staff trainers in the area. You know, we do the house share that so many of us experienced.
Yeah.
And then from there, worked in a few of those clubs for a few years, and then I actually went away from coaching for a little while. I was sort of looking for a slightly different direction. I stayed within sports. I worked at a private health club for a couple of years as a sports director and oversaw their kids programming for a few years. And then it was only really once my son was born, he's turning 9 next month, so sort of 9 or 10 years ago, that I got back into coaching, because it enabled my wife and I to juggle work and family life a little bit better.
100%. Yep.
100%. Yeah.
So you mentioned there that you remember back in the day, back when UK Elite had a relationship with NSCAA, now United Soccer Coaches. Would they have put you through some of the licensing then? You've done like your national, or I remember whenever I came over, we had done national, advanced national with those guys. I thought those courses were fantastic.
Yeah, they were great courses. I think they had such a good relationship with their NSCA that they, when we first came out for the summers, they would host courses at their summer orientation. So yep. I think the first ones that we started off doing were the regional diploma, yep. and then the advanced regional. And then the following year, I think I did my national. And then a year or two later, I think I actually went to a residential at Amherst College and did my advanced national. And yeah. those courses were great. And it was at the time like a really good opportunity to learn some new methods and to network, which for a lot of us coming over from overseas, the networking piece is huge because we don't have that already existing for us.
Yep.
We perhaps haven't played here. We perhaps haven't gone through the college cycle over here. So building that network through courses has been really valuable for me, at least in my coaching.
I agree. And the advanced, I remember whenever we done our advanced national, it was kind of put on just for the UK Elite staff. It was Tim Bradbury and it was Steve Jones that led the course, and it was just all UK Elite staff on this course. But I remember we had to analyze a college game and create a session for it, one of the units within that session. So I think I remember I had say it was the midfield unit. I had to design a practice based on that game of how I would improve that team. I thought that was just an amazing exercise to do. Just when you're when we haven't been exposed to any college level coaching or anything over here, so I really enjoyed that piece. You know, and again, that was a great thing that UK Elite would provide us. But was the access to the UFUB or the advanced national and stuff. So when you went away to with your private was it a private health club that you worked in? Yep. Yeah. So you would organize a programming for the children there, would you?
Yeah. So it was the kind of place where it was bog standard gym that a family could go to, and then they had one portion of the club that was geared towards kids. So there was an after-school care there, so kids could come with their family to the gym after school, and there would be activities for them to do. So my job there was to run that after-school care and make sure the kids were supervised. If they needed help with homework, they could do it. If they needed, help putting a disc in the Wii or whatever to play video games, that there was staff on hand to help them do that. Yep. But then also bring in programs to run. If kids want to do a soccer class after school, that they can do that, or work with the aquatics department and have swim lessons and bring in karate instructors and really kind of give them that after school experience within this health club without having to, for a parent at least, hop in a car and drive here and hop in a car and drive there. The mums and dads could go do their workout. They could go take a class and then come pick their kids up afterwards, and their kids will have been able to take part in an activity too. So I was there for about 2 or 3 years. We ran summer camps there as well. So I had some experience.
It's a bit of a change of pace, but I suppose it gave you, all the skills that you learned there as well, all carry forward to the future endeavors. When you got back into coaching, what capacity were you getting back in at, and did you work on certain clubs?
So, yeah, at that point, I was living, my wife and I bought a house in Northern Westchester. We were living in Northern Westchester. I still knew people within the soccer industry. I knew UK Elite, still had relationships with clubs in my area. So I simply just reached out to those clubs and UK Elite and asked if there was a need for a trainer to come in and work with them, which they did. I ended up working at a club in Lewisburg, Katona area called John Jay, and worked in their travel program for a few years before, again, I moved. And then I also started coaching more locally to where I live now. But I think during that time that I was working at John Jay, I was also doing a little bit of work with Larchmont and Mamaroneck. And I think that's where our paths originally crossed was within Larchmont, Mamaroneck, and coaching there. So I was kind of juggling working as an independent coach and trying to fill my schedule as much as possible, which, as you know, is a constant moving jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, multiple gigs, mate, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a few years ago now. I moved up to Dutchess County about 4 or 5 years ago, and I coach more locally within clubs here, and I work as a travel director of coaching within East Fishkill Soccer Club, and I also have a head coaching gig with the local community college. It's called Dutchess Community College. They're a junior college, so it's a two-year school. So I've kind of embedded myself here a little bit in the community, which I really enjoy. Trying to have a positive impact on the soccer community locally to where I live and where my son will grow up.
100%, mate. That's brilliant. And maybe we'll get to the college in a second, but so what would your roles entail with being the director of coaching at East Fishkill? Are you guys, do you have trainers for every team, or what sort of impact would you have on the teams there? Are you doing anything with curriculums or coach education? What do you do for the clubs?
So our club is, you know, it's a travel club. It's primarily a volunteer run organization. We have a lot of parent coaches that run our travel teams that they also supplement the practices that the kids get with bringing in either an independent trainer like myself, or they may reach out to an organization like Curva and bring trainers in through Curva. So my job in that capacity is to really help and support the programs and the teams by giving them access to trainers that are good quality trainers that, you know, have good experience, are good at working with the kids, and are kind of in line with us as a club. And then also for those times where parent coaches are going on the field and running sessions themselves, trying to work towards giving them the resources to be able to do that confidently and competently, so that the kids are getting a good practice and an enjoyable practice and learning something and wanting to come back. Beyond that, I'm trying to just make sure that our club is offering as much as it can to the best of its abilities, so that we have supplemental programming for goalkeepers, so that we have speed and agility sessions, so that we have goal scoring clinics, different types of camps. So really just trying to make sure that we're checking all the boxes to make sure that it's a place that someone would want their kid to play and where kids would want to play and they'd want to play for a long time.
Yeah, foster a love for the game and a grassroots capacity and stuff. Yeah, fantastic, mate. So again, I wanted to, whenever I knew you were coming on the podcast, I was wanting to pick your brain, because I was like, I remember, you know what it's like when you come to the States. Everyone wants to be a college coach, right? Everyone wants to get into it at some capacity, or at least what you think you do when you first come over here. So how did you get into coaching in the community college? How did you get into that? Did you have to do some volunteer work? Did you apply? How did you go about navigating that?
Yes, it was networking again. I basically spent a bit of time reaching out to local colleges for me. So in my area, there's quite a few local colleges that have good soccer programs. We have Vassar College that's in Poughkeepsie. They're a Division III school. We have Marist College, which is also in Poughkeepsie. They're a Division I program. Across the river from me, which is probably 30 to 40 minutes from me, is West Point. which obviously is probably a world-renowned school.
Yeah,
so
master
all
school.
I did all I did during my first 6 months up here was to reach out to those coaches. And I think the first coach that I got a response from, surprisingly enough, was the men's West Point coach.
Oh.
And he really was great with me and said, yeah, I reached out and said I wanted to learn, wanted to volunteer my time. I wanted to potentially come over and watch some practices. And he connected with me over the phone and said, yeah, come in, love to help. You know, I think it's a great attitude, come in and learn. So I was going over and watching sessions there. And then I also reached out to Marist. Selfishly for me, Marist is a little bit closer.
Yeah.
So I the guys there were also great and said, yeah, here's our practice times, come over. I've sat in on video analysis with them. I've sat in on just sitting in the bleachers and watching a practice. I've gone and watched a couple of their games. So that introduction to that college experience was, that's kind of how I did it. And it was, I then ended up at Bard College, which I can't say it was because of having done those volunteer positions, but it was more me networking in those areas and kind of making people aware of the fact that that was something I wanted to do.
Yeah,
so
I think it's a great thing you've done there too, even just going and watching the sessions, seeing the structure, seeing how different multiple programs run their practices, even just the organizational structure of it, and who's all. I think that just gives you a good grounding in it. So I mean, hats off to you, mate, for, you know, for putting in the hours when, you know, when it is volunteering, but when you get the knowledge that you need to go ahead and get in somewhere like Bard there.
Yeah. So when I went into Bard, that was the head coach at the time was working with some travel teams in East Fishkill.
Right, okay.
And I'd made a few people in East Fishkill aware of the fact that I had aspirations to coach at college level. And so she had asked me to come in as an assistant on the women's program at Bard. So I did that a couple of years ago. I spent a year there with Kate at Bard as her assistant, and went through a cycle of a preseason, and a little bit of recruiting. So that was a good kind of learning experience, a learning curve for me, which is primarily why I took it on.
100%. What was involved in the recruitment aspect of it? Was it you watching other players, or were you online, or how did you do that?
Yeah, so the recruiting environment at that time was a little bit odd because it was COVID. We went through a recruiting year of it being primarily virtual. So we would have a lot of players reach out to us with footage. So we would then review that footage, review academics. Bard is a highly academic school. So the threshold to get in there for a student athlete is really high. Their GPA, you know, I think it was students there that their GPA, we wouldn't really look at players that had GPAs less than like 3.6. You know, we were looking at players more that had GPAs of 3.8 and above, which is a very high attainment. So that was helpful in the sense that it shrunk the player pool.
I wouldn't be applying there myself.
No, I'm surprised. I'm surprised they let me through the door.
Yeah.
But so the recruiting in that sense was tough because it was virtual. Towards the end, I did get out to some college showcases, tournaments down in Nevada and Las Vegas, and then tournaments down at the Disney Showcase, which is a big one down in Florida.
Good experience.
Great experience. Enjoyed networking and talking with players and their families about their aspirations and what they wanted from a school. I think my only regret with Bard is not having stayed longer to really go through a few years of a recruiting cycle to really see whether you can make impact and change on a program.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty hard to do within 1 year. I
Course.
think to be able to impact change within 3 to 4 years is probably more realistic. So that's probably my only regret from not being there. That I chose to take the head men's job at the community college, which is a completely different animal altogether.
Yeah.
From a recruiting side, it's local. So the recruiting looks very different,
yeah,
you know,
of
in the
course,
sense
yeah.
that you're perhaps not getting so many players that are reaching out to you to say that they want to come and play there. There, perhaps they might be at the community college, not as a first option, might be a second option.
Yeah.
Or they might be at a community college because they really need to work on their grades, so they're not interested in any extracurriculars like soccer. So I'm doing what I can to give the community college a little bit more visibility within the community, with outreach programs, getting my current college rostered players out to local clubs and supporting and working with local clubs so that kids can see that there is a program at the community college, and to try and have those kind of ID and showcase events at our school and to host those ourselves. Perhaps not in a tournament format, but more as an individual player coming in that's potentially interested in playing at a community college, that they can come in and have an experience of what a college ID clinic would look like and put themselves, you know, forward to say, I'm interested in potentially playing at your school, or use it as an experience to get rid of some nerves before going to an ID showcase for a D1 school.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to work with the school and the local community to really get a little bit more visibility for the program and to get that program really ticking again.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on your head coaching job. I mean, that's, you know, all the trips and networking all paid off,
yeah.
Right? And I'm sure you've got, I don't know, maybe you've got other aspirations in the future, but getting that head coaching job, you know, it's a great, great grounding, mate. So congrats. Mm-hmm. We wanted to talk about one of the topics that you were interested in. And I guess maybe you see it a lot in your current role, but maybe as a director of coaching, where they were talking about maybe children that play multiple sports and how they can juggle competitive soccer.
Mm-hmm.
So do you see that a lot in East Fishkill? Is that something that you work with?
Yeah, I think I've probably seen it always as a coach,
yeah.
That you know, we're so laser focused on soccer, and it's our priority, it's our job, it's our passion, it's
yeah.
What we do. So we often sort of lose sight of the fact that a 9-year-old kid or a 10-year-old player is not just playing soccer, that they might have come from a music practice, or they might have been at school doing a science after school activity, that, or they may also be on a basketball team and a lacrosse team, and soccer for them right now might not be their number one priority. But I think it's really come into the forefront of my mind recently with my son. My son plays travel soccer. He does multiple other after school activities, and I'm still in a phase for him where I'm trying to expose him to as many different sports as I can. And growing up, I swam competitively. I played rugby. I played cricket. I did track. I was on the soccer team. Like, if there was a sport going, I had to go at it.
Yep.
Right. And obviously for my mum and dad, that was a huge commitment, you know, but I don't think any one of those sports that I had really obstructed me from doing others. Everything was a lot more seasonal back home, that you'd have your soccer season, and then if you weren't doing that in the summer, you could play cricket or you could do track, you know, and there weren't so many conflicts. But now, trying to expose my son to multiple sports is difficult because he's now into a soccer program where the commitment is really year round.
Yeah.
And there's a fear probably amongst a lot of parents that if you skip a winter indoor season with soccer to go play basketball, that your kid's going to get left behind.
Left behind, yeah.
And bigger picture, I think the drop-off rate that we see at the high school level is potentially due to the fact that there are too many kids specializing so early that they get bored of it and they just throw the towel in and they're done. The level of injuries we see across high school soccer, collegiate soccer with ACL injuries and things like that is probably because of that early specialization. And we perhaps aren't reaping the rewards of playing a basketball for a year or two, trying baseball, doing lacrosse, trying soccer, but without feeling like if I play lacrosse, that's
got to
be my
only
thing.
Yep. Just as a, I'm not disagreeing with you at all, mate. Just when we play a little bit of devil's advocate, what about if there was an individual that thought that, you know what, it gets to the point where, you know, the kids try in the US, the culture is, you try multiple sports, you try a little bit of baseball, a little bit of basketball. But what if someone was to say, you know what, it just becomes at some point sports sampling? And that they're not really excelling or, you know, getting a real interest or fostering a real love for one. What would you sort of say to that if someone was, you know, if I guess it's only sort of natural if you're playing at multiple sports and you're not participating in one or the other, you know, and it's very much a well spread out sort of diet of sports, if you want to say, that maybe you're not spending enough time dedicating and learning the fundamental skills of one. What would you say? What do you think about that? Do you think there's a place for that, or should we maybe limit some or be a bit more seasonal in it?
I think I'd agree that, it is sports sampling. And I think that kids should be allowed to take part in that. And the argument of becoming non-specialized in one of those sports is a good one and is a valid one, but I think for me that the child, the player, would have to be the driving factor behind deciding what becomes their specialization. And I think it's hard to only show a child soccer and then have them say, that's all I want to do. Yep. But they haven't seen lacrosse and they haven't seen basketball. And this might sort of go against, you know, I'm kind of shooting myself in the foot, right? Because soccer is an industry that I work in and soccer is an industry that I earn a living from. So to sit there and say that kids should be playing other sports might seem like a contradiction, but I think in the long term, there will be more kids that will continue playing high school sports and beyond based on what they've discovered and what they enjoy. And if a child turns around and, 11, 12 years old and says, I love soccer and that's all I want to do, great, go for it.
Yeah. Do you know what?
But so they can say that. Yeah, they can say it having known that they can't play basketball and they're not very good at baseball or that they don't enjoy lacrosse or things like that. But at least they're making an informed decision.
Yeah, that's great. I actually had an experience last year where one of my 2013 girls teams a lot of those families are very soccer orientated. And when we'd done a bunch of tournaments that they kind of had to be dedicated to playing soccer with the amount of tournaments that we'd done and do. So but they signed up for a basketball rec season over the summer. And I'd got the call. I went and watched a couple of their games. You know, I'm good friends with some of their families. And it was really interesting to see how the sports sort of do link up those two sports with the movement patterns and, you know, but seeing some of the children that were maybe not at the forefront of, like, maybe not in the top five of your soccer talent pool, but excelling in basketball. You know, it was really interesting to see. Maybe it was just the hand-eye coordination, or maybe that sport just looked like something that maybe they were passionate in, or they had all more experience than other kids. But it was really interesting. And some of the kids that were very good, they were, you know, in soccer all over the place in basketball. So it was with this organization, or but it was interesting to see. I think there's definitely a place for it.
I think sure there's a lot of there's a lot of people in this area that they over the winter their kids play hockey, and when I look at hockey, I love watching hockey's one of the it's probably the sport that I enjoy the American sport that I enjoy watching the most because it reminds me of five-a-side football, right? So those movement patterns and the fluidity of hockey, the transfer, like if a kid's playing in hockey, there's so much transfer of skill, and understanding and game, understanding a game and recognizing moments in the game to do certain things. I think that transfer is it exists, and I can only speak positively about trying something else because in basketball it's the same. Like I don't enjoy basketball as much because
it's like futsal up and down the court, doesn't it? It's like almost a bit like spritz.
I lose track of the score because I'm just like, all right, each team scored 100 points, but the game's been won by two. I just it just loses interest. But I think there's a lot of transfer between sports, and I think really players and families finding out what motivates them and drives them and what's their passion is important before just trying one and saying, right, this is it.
I think definitely when they're at that younger age, it's definitely it's something that should be happening with their, and you know, if they do express interest that they want to invest more time and dedication to soccer, then I guess the natural pathway is that, you know, they're going to start doing more tournaments. And the other opportunities that there's, the dual of sports kind of then is limited, right? As the level goes up and as the interest level goes up, as they grow their talent, so I think, you know, it's definitely something that at a younger age. I mean, I'm not a dad, but I'm sure it's something that I will do eventually. Is expose them apart from baseball, but I haven't got the time for that. But anyway, mate, you said something before. Before we started recording, mate, that I actually thought was really good, that you were you were starting to do your instructor license for your grassroots. So what does that entail, mate, and how are you going to impact grassroots coaching in your area?
Yeah, so about 6 months ago, US Soccer put out a notice that they were starting a coach educator course. I have my C license with US Soccer, and I was looking to take more licensing, but wasn't sure if I was quite ready for the B. And I looked at the coach educator license, and with my C license, I could only instruct up to a grassroots level. So I thought that it would be good to kind of put my money where my mouth is, in the sense that there's a lot of criticism sometimes pointed at the direction of sidelines on soccer fields and, you know, parent coaches and things like that. And that perhaps if having coached for 20 years, I've interacted with a lot of players and hopefully helped a lot of players that are still playing. But as I've got older, I've probably realized that if I can impact and improve a parent coach or a trainer, that I'm having a much bigger impact because they are then coaching. They themselves might be coaching 100 kids a week, or they might be coaching two or three sessions a week. So to be able to do that, I thought was a step in the right direction, rather than just kind of sitting there and saying, oh, you know, this person's this and this one's not very good and this team's not good because of the coach, that I would try and help. And the process I'm at right now with the course is that I started it, I think, back in August. And went
a lot to it.
through. There's a lot to it, and I don't think I'm done until April. So the phase that I'm in right now is I've just finished a phase where we've learned the content, or are learning the content of the grassroots courses. And now we're going into a phase where we're actively teaching courses with a supervisor. So someone that's already qualified, someone that's our mentor. We go into a class with people from local community that are getting their license in and teaching portions of that course to eventually by April be able to go out and run our own courses from head to toe.
Right.
So it's been a process, but it's enjoyable.
Yeah. So is that the goal? Do you have to go out and take some and have someone assess your teaching on your delivery of the course?
Yeah. So I'm in Eastern New York. So the director of coaching for Eastern New York is Tim Bradbury. His name's popped up a few times before on your podcast. Sure. That, you know, a lot of us have had interactions with Tim over the last decade or so. So Tim's my mentor. So Tim, no doubt, is going to push me and challenge me, and you know, hopefully at the end of it, I'll be a good coach educator to go out and help other people and get their licenses. And like I said, just in a small way, I know it's a very small way, but maybe improve the level of experience that kids are having playing soccer.
100%. Well, just even just like impacting that coach and giving him some, you know, even if you impact a couple of coaches, you know, just even in how they deliver a session, I'm sure, you know, the knock-on effect of that is going to be as high, mate. So I'm pretty sure it'll be very rewarding for you. So just to finish off, is there any, what sort of coaching aspirations do you have for the future? You know, I know you're getting a little bit of college coaching. You're still doing your travel director coaching, and you're now instructing as well. Have you any aspirations for the future?
Yeah, I had someone asked me this the other day that I'm in a position right now where I have my foot in three aspects that I've always wanted to. So I have my travel director coaching role. I have a college head coaching role, and then this coach educator piece. I'm still actively coaching independently too. So if there's nights of the week that I can go out and coach somewhere elsewhere, then I do. But I'm open to any of those pathways progressing. So if I had an opportunity to be involved again, like I'm with the junior college right now, if I had opportunity to be involved with a higher level, a D2 or a D1 program, then perhaps I'd take that opportunity. But I also have to consider the fact that I've made roots in Dutchess County.
You've got a great gig going on too, yeah.
Yeah, and I wish I was 25, but I'm not 25 anymore. And I can't just up sticks and there might be a great coaching opportunity in California at a college, but I can't do that because I have a family here in New York and would want to be in New York. So that limits the pool of colleges within this area that I could potentially coach at. You know, I mentioned a couple earlier. You know, there's a ton of colleges in Westchester, as you know. So that opportunity that has become a little bit narrower. I think really being able to improve the soccer at those levels, at the travel level, within my hometown, and then also within the junior college. I think I'll feel happy in 5 years if the junior college program is slightly more competitive, and if the travel program continues to grow and continues to produce, you know, really competitive teams, which East Fishkill has been known for. You know, 10, 15 years, they've always been a strong program. I'm sure you can probably recall Larchmont having games against them. And I think the two high schools with John Jay East Fishkill, I think they've played games against Mamaroneck in recent years in playoffs and things like that. So they both produce good levels of soccer. Our neighbouring high school in Arlington also produces a good level of soccer. So that's why it's a challenge to try and improve the junior college school, because so many of those players jump over a junior college school and end up at a bigger school playing soccer. So although if you look at it, you're like, you know, Dutchess Community College should have a, you know, massively competitive program, but the truth of the matter is that those quality players often end up going elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas 15, 20, maybe longer ago, that wasn't the case. That perhaps there were more kids going the junior college route and then getting picked up by a bigger school.
Brilliant, mate. And what about your young son? He's 9 years old. Is he kicking a ball?
He's kicking a ball, yeah. He's on a travel team. He's doing well. He's enjoying it. Like I said, I'm just trying to... I know you mentioned it earlier about baseball, but it's not my idea of fun either. But
he's shown interest. Great.
It's shown interest. So it's one of those that, like, this spring, I'm trying to figure out how do I get him on a baseball field so he can try it.
Yeah, he wants to enjoy it, yeah.
And keep him, you know, playing within his team without one negatively affecting the other.
That's it.
And I don't know that there's a perfect answer without just saying, let's just give it a go. Yeah. But I'll let you know how those baseball games go.
Yeah, keep you posted, mate.
Yeah.
Well, Ian, thank you very much, mate, for your time today. Really appreciate you coming on, mate. And we'd love to hear from some more from you again soon, mate.
All right, appreciate it. Thanks, Greg.